you're looking to find the perfect person to actually talk about a recent report which deals with less than a third of parents in the UK teaching their children how to cook at home, you need to have a genuine legend, a true Wonder Woman in every sense of the word, from her interior designer work, TV presenter extraordinaire. We're delighted to welcome to the Literary Drive Morning Edition the fabulous, amazingly talented Linda Barker. How are you, Linda?
I'm really good after that intro. Thanks, Alex. Terrific, yeah.
It's very critical. There are lots of people that were sort of saying, is it the Linda Barker? I said, yes, very much so. A fantastic individual. Let's go straight down to this particular report, which is quite fascinating in all sorts of ways, but it kind of shows where we are in the 21st century. 2 in 5 children regularly help in the kitchen, but 73% of under 18 still don't cook for themselves. Heaven only knows what happens with respect to students when they get over 18.
Oh, I know. It is really interesting research, isn't it? I mean, those stats just kind of say, well, there is an interest in, and you know, young kids kind of really wanting to do stuff, and young kids attaching importance to food and cooking. But yeah, it's still kind of very worrying that you know, those 18-year-olds can't cook for themselves. You know, and yeah, you're right, when they go to uni, you know, how are they surviving at all? But yeah, I think it's important really to understand that we know this. We know we've got to kind of get kids into the kitchen. And it's not just me saying this. You know, the government are doing something about it wholeheartedly. Come September, they're starting to teach cooking in even primary schools, you know, key stage 2 and 3. So there is a big shift towards getting people into the kitchen and learning basic cookery skills. And, you know, learning to cook a meal. This is the important thing. You know, it's not just about cooking biscuits or cakes or decorating cakes and muffins and whatever they're cooking, but it's about creating a whole meal, a substantial meal that's nutritious and all the rest of it. But yeah, it's kind of very interesting research, and it surprised me in many ways, really, because, you know, food has been on the agenda for a good few years, you know, thanks to, you know, the TV chefs and the like.
Coming up on the show, we'll be speaking to William Sitwell, the editor of Waitrose Food, and indeed gastronomic culinary expert himself from that point of view. Linda, we're constantly looking, as you've just said there, at the range of cookery programmes that are actually there from that point of view. I was interested to find that 14% of parents in this survey, which was conducted by one poll last year, say that their children are able to prepare a meal for the entire family. I would have thought that's probably at the sort of the extreme end of the scale. I mean, perhaps not a full roast, perhaps, but that's interesting. I mean, is it a case of, as you said, it's curriculum, it's education, whether we call it home economics, whether we call it cooking, whether we call it the science of gastronomy, is it, or is it just a case of we need your good self, Linda, to be the face of cooking at home and all the rest of the bits and pieces?
Well, I'm you know, I'm just a cook at home. You know, I brought my daughter up to cook and all the rest of it. So, you know, I think what's important is the kitchen is at the heart of the home. And this is what the survey has shown. I'm working for Wren Living, and the research that we've brought is that kitchens are really important. And what's fascinating is people are really wanting to make plans to make their kitchens better spaces. We've noticed as soon as my collection launched a few weeks ago that people are coming in and wanting colourful kitchens more than ever. Now, that's really interesting, because a few years ago, we were neutralising all our home spaces. We're painting them beige and cream and all the rest of it. But now, I think there's coming into 2014, there's a real passion for the home again, and particularly the kitchen, which is really great news, because we know that we need to educate our kids. We know that youngsters, you know, the cooking has fallen off the agenda at school. You know, it's out of the curriculum. It has been for a few years, and now the government bringing it back. There's lots of reasons. You know, we're all busy. You know, mums and dads are busy. There's little time to cook, so it might be convenience foods. But I think, I mean, it's good that, you know, Waitrose and the supermarkets are getting on board with this, because they need to. That's part of the education as well. They need to teach kids about the provenance of food, that, you know, things can be made from scratch, and it's not just all about convenience. Yeah, of course, some of it is convenience. You know, we've got to be able to cook quickly sometimes, but not all the time. So we're interested that the kitchen is just going to be a bigger part, a bigger hub In the home again.
Well, having actually just had to go through an interesting change around in my own sort of kitchen design due to a flood that took place. It was a water feature I wasn't looking forward to, but it's all good. I was fascinated to come across the four top tips that you've produced for creating a multifunctional kitchen. I do like the one, utilise as much storage space as possible to declutter. It's very important.
It's very what?
It's very important.
It is. It's so important, especially if you're starting to cook, you know, if you've got everything on the works. And let's face it, we do so much in the kitchen. You know, when we talk to people about how they want to design their kitchens and the kitchens in their dreams, you know, it's about kids, you know, doing their homework and there's books there, you know. So very quickly, your kitchen can become something that's not just about food, which is fine, you know, but as long as there's a place to put everything and then a nice clear area to
and
start.
And demonstrating with your expertise with interior design, I do like the line about colours. Vibrant yellows encourage energy and happiness. Greens and blues encourage tranquility. And as we said earlier, clearly the stainless steel market is so last century.
Well, I kind of like stainless steel, but it's really encouraging, I think. I mean, I was just so happy to go into store a few weeks ago and discover that the kitchens that people are buying are, you know, they're blue and that we've got yellows and the beautiful aubergines, all these colours. And, you know, these are kind of, you know, this is kind of pioneering stuff. We're putting our kind of finger in the wind here to see what people are wanting, because I've got this big paint chart of 42 colours, and it's like, will people buy white or off-white or cream? And they are going for, you know, the duck egg blues and the damsons and, you know, the Baltic blues. Really encouraging stuff here. I'm loving the fact that people are falling in love with their home again.
Colour coordination and interior design. This is the reason why, as we all know, you were the best ever winner of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. You know, there could be no further. Might as well just can the series immediately after you'd won it, basically. That's the bottom line. Bottom line at this particular stage, Linda, is two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Oh, it's a hugely vibracious telephonic link.
Well, there we are, vibracious. I think I'll add that to the list of wonderful sort of setups. And the second connection is, can we perhaps prevail upon you in the not-too-distant future to join us again and keep us updated on the fabulous world of interior design and, indeed, that kitchen being at the heart of the home?
It would be my absolute pleasure. Thank you for asking.
Linda Barker, interior designer and TV presenter extraordinaire. We salute you. Take care now.
The finest in gourmet criticism and foodie delights, and the author of A History of Food in 100 Recipes. Quite clearly a question of quality personified. It's William Sitwell on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Do you feel vibracious, William?
Vibracious?
Yes.
I don't know. Is that something I should admit? Feeling? I feel angry, actually, to be honest with you.
Oh, no. Oh, well, we'll vent, we'll sort the way through it. You know, I know you are the meat in a sandwich of Linda Barker and Jenny Seagrove, so, you know, to work our way through that whole process. In the studio, we have Katie Grimmison, of course, and Rachel Warren, and they're all keen to talk scrambled eggs. So, let's not mess around. Let's not make that omelette. William, scrambled eggs.
Well, the cafe that I've been sitting in for the last half an hour doesn't think, whether the chef thinks that scrambled eggs are in fact omelette. And, I hate sending food back. I feel it's really sort of pompous and arrogant. But when you ask for scrambled eggs, and I always make this mistake, because actually I think the only place that I can get decent scrambled eggs is at home. Because you go to a smart restaurant or whatever, and they kind of, you know, I think the heat's on too high. You know, or they leave it too long. So the first thing I had was an omelette, because it was runny and raw on the top, hard in the middle, and actually sort of burnt to a crisp at the sides. So we sent that one back. Then it came back, and there were sort of, you know, watery bits of butter trickling out of a thing that I would still protest is an omelette. But I suppose, I don't know, maybe one man's omelette is another man's scrambled eggs or vice versa, but I just think that, I need to start a new campaign. I can't remember what last week's was.
I think we were into juicing last week, William. Juicing was the key thing we were looking for, how to actually juice our stuff. And Katie was particularly fascinated with the intense description we talked about juicing things. So it's basically real scrambled eggs, I suspect.
Yeah, real. I'm going to start a campaign for real scrambled eggs. And that campaign, I think, starts this morning, Alex. Yeah. And with the help of the Grimmison, who can make up the banners.
Are you up for that, Katie?
Yeah.
Good public relations work, actually. Yeah, real scrambled eggs. We've got a finally English student as well with Rachel Warren here from Bury St Edmunds. I mean, what's the scrambled egg situation like in Bury St Edmunds, Rachel?
I don't know. I did go out for breakfast once and they have very good scrambled eggs.
Scrambled eggs in Bury St Edmunds, William. So clearly, you know, London, not the place for scrambled eggs. Never mind. Extraordinary. Do you have any questions you'd like us to put to Jenny Seagrove, who's obviously a vegetarian, and I don't know what she sits with respect to scrambled eggs. I wouldn't say sits on scrambled eggs, but, you know, different line.
Well, Jenny Seagrove is a wonderful woman who was the voice of Waitrose for many years.
Did you see?
She can't be all bad.
That's you. You
said... And also, she's on my favourite Judge John Deed show.
Yeah.
With that dude from The Professionals.
Martin Shaw.
So there are all those plus points, and then there was Michael Winner. And I think that's a plus point too, because I was a great fan of his.
Yeah, I don't think I'll necessarily go down the Michael Winner route, but we'll sort of make sure that big up as far as the voice of Waitrose is concerned, because that's nice. You know, we should be talking about her current production, Fallen Angels, of course, which she's currently on tour with, together with Sarah Crowe, so great stuff there. William, I mean, will you be able to get yourself back into a kind of equitable, calm structure after obviously the anger that I've sensed has come across vis-a-vis the scrambled egg situation?
Well, I have to say, I'm in a moral dilemma. Mm. Okay, I'll explain this, right? As you know, I do restaurant criticism, right? Mm. And my new restaurant reviews from this week will be appearing on the Huffington Post weekly.
Yes, excellent.
Right? So I'm having breakfast with a PR friend of mine, and this cafe that we're eating in, she wants me to review. Now, the problem is, if I review it, I will put the knife in and savage it. But then my friendship with the PR will be brutally torn apart.
The police are on the case.
The question is, where is my integrity? To review or not review? I think the listeners should vote.
Right. Well,
I'm being taken away now.
Yes. Rachel, very quickly, what's your view? What should William do?
Oh, if I were you, I wouldn't review.
No review.
Yeah,
Rachel Warren says no review. Katie Grimason, review or no review?
I think you could review it, but review it nicely.
Not be so hard. You don't want to lie about a disappointing breakfast,
yeah.
Though.
Yeah,
nothing
that's
worse.
True.
Nothing worse than lying about a breakfast that's disappointed you. You know,
that's one vote. So it's nail biting. Who's going to cast the deciding vote? There's one for review and one for against.
Dear.
Well, how do you sit on it, Alex?
Very carefully. But if pushed, I'd probably say no review. I would probably say no review on the basis of the scrambled egg situation. I know it's tough, but, you know, if they can't... And then it's the runny thing. It's the way you describe the runny thing.
Yeah, no.
You know, that's the sort of thing which, to me... And it's not... Because I've from a fried egg situation, you've got to get the level of runniness in a fried egg. It's got to be exactly... Because otherwise, wear a bib and a napkin. Otherwise, disaster on the front. You know, I'm in there. William, it's been phenomenal. Surreal as ever, but phenomenal. We're hopeful that William might be able to join us for Lincoln Inspired. I sent him some initial dates to talk about various other bits and pieces there, which would be very exciting, because you can meet him again, Katie. Brilliant. Rachel, last two questions for William Sitwell, please.
Okay. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yeah, you've made my mind up. Well, no, that you, basically representing the nation, have declared I do not review. So yes. I've got to review something else. That's the next dilemma. But yes, reasonable.
Good. And yeah. Will you be joining us again soon?
I don't know. I'm
not sure.
I'll leave it to you.
It's decisions, you see. It's always very difficult to actually work through. I think we can say William Sitwell will return.
With lashings of country news, science fiction views, top interviews and a clear audio muse, it's the Midweek Drive on Siren 107.3 FM.
Walking down to Frith Street, dawn is creeping up on. Keep running.
Quite simply glorious. Something which is said about everything from the point of view of Judge John Deed, from the point of view of the constant wife, from certainly a woman of substance, and we say it's glorious quite simply because, as William Sitwell's just said when he identified indeed our next co-presenting guest as the voice of Waitrose in times past, Jenny Seagrove is glorious. Good morning, Jenny. How are you?
Goodness me. What a nice way to start the day.
That's the way forward. That's the critical thing. I mean, I feel in many ways, because on a slightly serious note, we worked extensively with the late Alexandra Bastida with her ABC Animal Sanctuary. And
she was wonderful.
Very much so. And we had a little tribute to her on the show last week, etc. But you always mention, so you must feature Jenny on the show. Talk about the animal concerns, etc. I mean, and lo and behold, not necessarily talk about animal concerns, but certainly to talk about the fabulous Fallen Angel setup. Here you are, finally connected on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
I'm thrilled. Thank you for having me. Well, and God bless Alex. She was a lovely lady.
Yeah, absolutely so. I'm sure she'll be looking down and saying, yes, very good.
I got them together at last. What do I have to do? Die.
Well, nice line, Jenny. I think you're going with respect
Sorry.
To that. No, it just works our way through that. Okay, quick introductions. In the studio, we have Rachel Warren.
Hello.
Hello.
Who's from Bury St Edmunds. Bury St Edmunds, a final year English student and also a vegetarian, which is good.
Yes, very nice too.
Yeah, so is Rachel. And we also have Katie Grimmison, who I must be described as an omnivore from Birmingham, but bless her heart, she's an American Studies student.
Hello, Jenny.
There we are.
Good morning.
So great stuff there. And as we said at the top of the piece, we're looking at the classic Noel Coward's Fallen Angels system, because, of course, you were taking this up to Darlington. It's been revived by, of course, your wonderful, fantastic partner, Bill Kenwright, and a classic line with yourself and Sarah Crowe, starring as best friends Julia and Jane in this new production of the Divine Comedy classic. So, an interesting line, Jenny. I mean, is it something that you think, yeah, this enables me to channel some of the material I've brought to Judge John Deed and even Woman of Substance, etc.
It enables me to have an awful lot of silliness and fun. It is a very, very, very funny piece. I don't read reviews, but Phil actually insisted on reading me a line from one of the reviews at Kingston. We're in Kingston at the moment yesterday. She said, this show comes with a health warning because, she said, I have never laughed so much in my life. I thought I was going to die. So it doesn't get much better than that, really.
I think that's spot on, really. And we, you know, as we just, laughter is the ideal form of medicine. I mean, there are people who are touring the country at this moment in time who've actually convinced folk that that is the case, that ultimately...
Well, it is heaven being able to make people laugh. And it is a proven thing that scientifically, if you laugh, it releases some chemical in your body that helps you fight disease, stress, whatever, you know.
And I suppose it's a case of getting slightly sozzled and inebriated. No, it's not real alcohol you're drinking on stage. It's just a case of you working through that. Unless there's a huge revelation here. But share with the listener, Jenny, the overall plot line of the tale and how it possibly deals with golf widows writ large for the 21st century.
Well, it was written in 1925, Noel Coward. And the interesting thing is that I believe it does resonate now because it is really a very, very funny but... still a discussion about loyalty and marriage and passion, the nature of love. And there are these two best friends, Jane and Julia. I play Julia. And they're married to two equally good friends, Fred and Willie. And the boys go off and play golf, and the girls have each had a postcard from a man called Maurice Duclos. They both fell in love with and had an affair with each one separately before they were married. And that was, you know, 12, 15 years ago. And the marriages have gone a little dull, as sometimes happens. Mm-hmm. And Maurice has said he's coming to town and he'd like to pick up with them. Well, of course, they then decide that night to have a little impromptu dinner party for two, hoping that he'll arrive and they can go, oh, Maurice, look, we're just having dinner. Do join us. And, of course, they're dressed up to the nines, drinking martinis and champagne. He doesn't arrive and they end up completely and absolutely out of their minds. And the truth comes out. The next day... I think she'd gone with Maurice. She thinks I've gone with Maurice. Both husbands come back early, and finally the Frenchman arrives. It's hilarious. I won't tell you any more than that, but it is hilarious.
I think Noel Coward has simply done it wonderfully once over again. Although I still think that Noel, if he's looking down on us, never quite kind of bettered his performance in the Italian Job. But that's just a minor point. Yeah, a wonderful success. Different line entirely. Rachel, any questions for Jenny, either about Fallen Angels or indeed life in general?
Well, that Fallen Angels sounds brilliant. Did you enjoy it? Are you enjoying it?
I love every second of it, absolutely every second. It's very physical for me because I do a lot of kind of throwing myself around and falling over. So I'm getting bruised and the arnica's being used. But no, I love every second.
Okay. Do you like all the people you're working with on it?
Oh, steady on.
I love them. Well, Sarah Crowe. Yeah, Sarah Crowe is an old friend of mine. Sarah Crowe's an old friend of mine, and she's also a patron of my animal sanctuary, so we get on very well. And I love the rest of the cast. I've worked with some of them before, and some of them are new, and they're wonderful. I'm thrilled.
That's what I like, Jenny, about the youth of today. They're final year undergraduates. Do you like the rest of the cast, then? What's she going to say? No, I can't even get a sakes. But class, Jenny, animal sanctuary. I mean, it's something that's very dear to our own heart. I mean, we featured one of our regular contributors, Minty Steed, earlier today. She's talking about votes for Toffee and the Bishop Wilton show. Toffee, not the actual thing. Toffee, a terrier. It's Guide Terrier. We were sort of looking for that. Some of the work that's actually been produced around the country is phenomenal. And we mentioned Alexandra, obviously, and her ABC Champions Animal Sanctuary and so on. What in particular kind of led you to actually sort of, you know, support what, as I've often said, is we are stewards of the planet. You know, we're here as partners. What kind of drew you to kind of be an active supporter with respect to obviously animal rights and so on?
Well, my mother loved animals. I grew up in Blackshire. I had dogs, and I don't know. You live with animals, and you just begin to see that they are absolutely sentient beings with feelings, with emotions. And I started to see the injustice that happens. And when I learned, because it's all about education as well, when I learned about what happens in zoos and what happens in, you know, the farming communities and how animals are abused, I became really upset about it. And I thought, well, they haven't got a voice. I must try and be a small voice in the wilderness for them. Yeah. And funnily enough, you talk about being a steward. I actually quote this a lot because I'm a trustee of Born Free, the Born Free Foundation. Yeah. And one of our trustees came in. And he said, I've got a daughter who's studying Hebrew at university. In fact, she's a scholar. And he said, she's just told me that the Bible originally, the original translation meant that man should have stewardship of the animals and the planet. And he said, and it's been rewritten so that we have domination of them, dominion. And he was apoplectic, and I've been apoplectic ever since because dominion over and stewardship of are two completely different things. Yeah, and we behave as if we have dominion over, but actually we're meant to be the keepers of it.
Precisely.
We have a duty of care.
Katie, questions or thoughts from yourself?
What's your favourite programme, what you've worked on?
That's
a tough one. That's a really tough one. I loved working on Judge John Deed because Martin Shaw's a dear friend and Gordon Newman, the writer-producer, became a very good friend. So that was a joy. I also, you're too young, you wouldn't know, but I did a film, one of the first films I did was called Local Hero, which is probably one of, in most people's top 10 films of a certain generation.
Every time you go to Newcastle United, you get the theme tune played. It's unbelievable.
Oh, it's wonderful, yes. Absolutely. So that was a joy to make, just because it was in the Highlands of Scotland, and it was beautiful, and the people were lovely, and it was just heaven. I've been very, very, very lucky. Very lucky indeed.
It's skill, talent and ability, Jenny. We've said this time and time again. That's the classic line that comes through on that basis.
It's actually 99% perspiration, I think, just having a bit of luck. I think you create your own luck up to a point by just sort of putting yourself out there, but I think an awful lot of it is hard work.
It was the Theatre Royal Windsor which saw the launch, obviously, of Fallen Angels and so on. You're on tour with the whole thing. As we said, exciting news. You're coming up to Darlington, which is about 126, 130 miles north of Lincoln, where this studio is actually based. In terms of the tour, is the tour going reasonably well? I would have thought it was going phenomenally well, really.
It's going phenomenally well, absolutely. I love playing Darlington. They're very, very nice, and I found a wonderful hotel that takes my dogs. So we have a joyous week. I have no idea what they'll make of this, but hopefully they'll come and laugh. Humour is a sort of universal thing, and it's quite physical in Act Two, so even if they don't get the wit, they'll get the silliness.
It's infectious, it's contagious, it's a must-see production. It's the fabulous Fallen Angels with Jenny Seagrove and, of course, Sarah Crowe on tour and all sorts of wonderful things. I think it just gets even better and better. I have to say, Jenny, I'm very impressed with how you've managed to avoid mentioning any sort of Merseyside Derby stuff throughout the interview, which is very good.
I think that's below the belt. Absolutely. If we'd have won, you would have done it completely differently.
No, not at all.
I think
actually, to be fair, Mr. Martinez is doing a fine job and is really good. But then, as a Manchester City supporter,
fantastic job. Are you a Manchester City supporter?
I am delighted.
Except that Aguero's got a hamstring problem.
I know. It's whatever.
Yeah, that's tough. Well, we are at a time in our season where injuries have caught up with us. But I don't think. I think sometimes you have games where it just doesn't go for you. And if Ross Barkley had scored in the first last minute or two, it might have been a different game.
Absolutely.
So it happens. We move on. That's not going to mark our season.
And that's why I would define Jenny Seagrove as a Renaissance woman, because not only has she got her finger on the pulse of association football, great actress, you know, steward of the planet, care of all the sorts of other bits and pieces. Jenny, very quickly, would you actually just give a plug for the website for your animal sanctuary so people can actually support and
get this? Oh, you are lovely. And actually, we've got a song. I've made a single, me and Pete Huff, who's the lead singer of the Hollies, and we brought in some of the Everton preschool students who are from generations of unemployment and asked them to sing the chorus. And it was, well, we've had some extraordinary experiences with them because they visited us at the sanctuary and related to the abused animal stories, just by the by. So the website is www.mane, as in horses mane, mainechantsanctuary.org. And you can actually listen to a clip of the song, and if you want to download it, you can pre-order it from iTunes. It's released on February the 24th.
Well, Jenny, you've already sort of opened up a whole range of wonderful things there. We've got two final critical questions to ask you. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today? Has it been?
I have.
It's been okay
it's
for you?
It's been a lovely experience, and I'm loving talking to you all.
Well, that's the critical, because the next crucial one is, obviously, we need to have a top animal sanctuary soul sort of together with respect to that. You've already said, vis-a-vis the upcoming charity single. So can we prevail upon you to join us again in the not-too-distant future, possibly February, to promote the single and move it even further forward through the magic of life?
I would love that. I'd be honoured.
Round of applause for Jenny Seagrove, please. Yay! And I think, I was something about John Denver, but I think the Hollies, really, Jenny, as a musical treat. Is that okay with you as good self? In particular, Hollies number you'd like to go for? The Air That I Breathe?
Yes, The Air That I Breathe. Sounds lovely.
I think it makes sense.